As I stand here in this pulpit for the very first time, I'm very grateful to have this opportunity here. I have given this sermon before, about 4 weeks ago at my beloved church in Reston. This is the sixth sermon I've done, I am planning to continue on to get my Master's of Divinity, even in 2 years, as one of your congregants up here was like, oh, you're planning in advance. I've been planning this for like 5 years, so it's just getting closer, and it is a great honor within this faith that we have this allowance for unqualified, lay-led voices. It's one of my favorite parts of our faith is that we allow each other to share with each other openly and honestly. I would like to say that we as a spiritual community need to continue to allow for different voices under different faith systems. In this religion, whatever your faith is, as long as it brings you to a place of compassion, it's welcome. And that's beautiful. And that's what we are called as congregations of many beliefs to do. We are attempting to walk together on different paths, which is not easy, but that's what our voices are for. From a nearby path, someone can call out if they found something, and we can all learn from that. Or that they've been hurt, and we can go and help. We are a unique spiritual community in this way, and I value it so highly. I could wax poetic about the importance of our differences enough to have its own sermon, but it does lead very well into the absolute necessity for forgiveness. Not only in our own church communities, but with every interaction we have with every person we meet. At the beginning of this service, I asked you to set an intention, whether that was to be open to the messages of the sermon, to be present in this hour, to not fall asleep. Whatever your intention was, has it been serving you well so far? Some nods, absolutely, nice. I find that when I actively make an intention, whatever I've set my mind to is easier to achieve. In yoga practice, often the teacher will ask you to make an intention. I have even been to a class where the teacher had us pick a card with a word on it, so it was easier for us to just be told what to make for our intention that day, and mine was grounded. My mind went many places here, grounded through my feet on the floor, grounded through my headspace, grounded in humility. As we flowed through poses, breathing through each movement, I kept thinking about how I could be more grounded. In the Christian aerobic dance class I take, we pray before and after each session. Our leader asks God to protect our bodies and guide our ears to the lyrics in the songs we're dancing to, which are all about the enduring love of Christ. I always translate these prayers to what feels right in my heart. An intention to be good to my body, to receive the love wrapped up in a language that doesn't necessarily exactly match my understanding of God. Joyful and intentional movement of the body is such a nurturing spiritual practice. And if you're not doing anything like it now, I highly recommend finding a physical spiritual practice that works for you. Hiking, for example, is a great one. I find that most things in life take a little practice, or a lot in some cases, and forgiveness is one of those things that needs practice, actual doing. As Alexander Pope famously stated, to err is human, to forgive, divine. And we see this as forgiveness plays an essential role in most religions. Yom Kippur, or Day of Atonement in Judaism, is a day of fasting and asking for forgiveness, not only of God, but of those whom you have wronged. Easter is a celebration of the resurrection of Christ, who in so doing forgave all of humanity's sins. One of the distinguishing features of Ramadan is forgiveness, according to missionislam.com. The Prophet explained in one hadith that Ramadan is a month whose beginning is mercy, whose middle is forgiveness, and whose end is freedom from the hellfire. Hellfire is a strong word, but it refers similarly to the Christian belief that we must be forgiven by God to be accepted into heaven. Forgiveness plays a major role in most religions. In the practice of meditation, used greatly in both Hinduism and Buddhism, one of the most powerful tools a person can learn is the power to forgive little things. One might think that the ideal meditative experience is one where the environment that you're occupying is comfortable and quiet, where your mind is empty and receptive to the forces around you. But sometimes the best meditative sessions are the ones where there are distractions, where the clock is ticking just a little too loud, or the temperature is too cold, when your mind just won't stop popping in thoughts of that stupid thing you said to that person you barely know. What we are called to do during meditation is take these distractions and forgive them. That's what I like to call it, at least. Life exists all around us, and we cannot control most of it. So if something is a distraction or an annoyance, the act of forgiving it will help us move forward with grace. Meditative guides often call this allowing, but I truly feel that's not as good a word as forgiving. Allowing implies you have any say at all. And in most cases, you don't. We occupy space with other people who perhaps like it a little colder, or maybe enjoy the ticking of the clock. These outside forces must be forgiven if you want to continue your meditative session with any success at all. When it is the thoughts from your own mind that won't leave you alone, that is when you need to forgive yourself. Often, a tool I will use when meditating is I imagine an old bristle brush that I use to gently sweep away those pesky thoughts. Sometimes this works, sometimes it doesn't, but the more I do it, the better I get. And the key to this is that at the end of the session, if it was frustrating, if you were unable to forgive the clock or the temperature or your own thoughts or whatever other little thing was keeping you from a good experience, then what you need to do is forgive yourself and replace any feelings of failure with feelings of gratitude for working through something uncomfortable, for taking the time to fail, for hopefully learning something that will help you the next time. You can see how this translates to real life, right? A little bit. Practicing forgiveness definitely does not have to be done through meditation, as I'm sure some of you are happy to hear. We each have a different way of walking through life, with different preferences, but practicing meditation can really be a helpful tool. The title of this sermon is Leading with Forgiveness. I've titled it this because I believe that if we, throughout our days, in every conversation, in every interaction, in every moment, if we put forgiveness at the front of things, that in and of itself is a practice. There are so many ways in which we can forgive. Forgive others who have wronged us, those who are actively working against us. Forgive other people for their oddities, allowing them to be who they are authentically. Forgiving ourselves for the way we spoke, for the way we used to think, for the way we treated someone else or ourselves. Forgive ourselves for our own oddities, allowing ourselves to be who we are authentically. Forgive the space around us that isn't exactly as we hope it would be. Forgive the efforts that went unnoticed. Forgive mistakes. Forgive the child who is learning. Forgive the adult who has stopped learning. Forgive the family member who couldn't forgive. Forgive regardless of intention. Forgive society for taking so long to see you as the beautiful, unique human you are. Forgive the language that doesn't match your preferred words. And forgive ignorance. We will not successfully forgive every time we have the opportunity to, but as we practice, we will get better. As we practice forgiving the little things, it gets easier to forgive the big ones. Sometimes we think of forgiveness in specific certain terms. Often, I think we see forgiveness as venerable, magnanimous. It can be so hard to do, especially when a great wrong has been felt on your end. When someone doesn't seem to care that they've hurt you, or they're still living life like what they did to you didn't affect them at all. Hear me now, the forgiveness is not for them. That forgiveness is for you. Forgiving allows us to move forward in grace. Those hurts that are extra sensitive, that need extra time, that maybe have been festering for a while, perhaps with no intention on your end to forgive at all. They cause damage. Damage to yourself, damage to your interpersonal relationships. Just remembering them can cause damage to your day, to your attitude. If you want to try and forgive these hurts, try leading with forgiveness, making an intentional practice of forgiving the little things every day. Don't focus on those big hurts. Focus on the practice. Check in with your heart about those particular hurts every now and then, and if the hurt is still there, let it be. Continue with your practice, but if you notice a softening, allow yourself to feel glad. Feel proud, because the practice of living a forgiving life is not always easy. And if the practice is working on your most painful hurts, then you should know that the practice you've done is valuable. I feel like people are usually worth the effort of forgiving. It takes courage to forgive. It takes good self-esteem to forgive, especially yourself. You must believe that you are worthy of forgiveness. And you are. We are all worthy of love and acceptance, even if people in our lives have tried to tell us otherwise. Even if there is no paternal figure in the sky whose love is unconditional and unyielding, that power of love is present in each of us. As our first principle states, all people have inherent worth and dignity. And this is true for you, just as it is true for your neighbor. If we can forgive like a God, we can love like a God. And whether God is a word you are cool with or not, hear me when I tell you that God is the power within each of us to choose good, to have good, to seek good, to want good, to do good. Replace good with love, that works too. Does this litany remind any of the Buddhists in the congregation of anything in particular? Do we have any Buddhists, self-identified Buddhists? Yay! To me, it reminds me of the Eightfold Path. It's the fourth noble truth. It's the way to enlightenment. which has often many different ways of describing it. Good, love, wise view, wise intention, wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood, wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration. The Eightfold Path is a how-to for living a divine life, a life close to the path of enlightenment, a path that is meant as a way to live without suffering. Holding on to grudges is certainly a type of dukkha or suffering. Loving others can be easier than loving the people closest to us. The people we are most vulnerable with, the people we interact with regularly and have expectations of, who have expectations of us, with whom we have history and baggage. If we love all of our sisters and brothers of this earth, that is the same as forgiving them. The practice of loving and forgiving things that are easier to love and forgive helps us be better at loving and forgiving when it seems impossible to do so due to whatever circumstance. Leading with forgiveness doesn't mean we allow ourselves to become doormats. Just because we forgive and allow for faults, mistakes, annoyances around us does not mean we have to live with them. Nor does it mean that we have to forget them. Maybe the choice of forgiving a loud ruckus, which is disturbing your peace, doesn't mean you have to sit there fighting your frustration with hopes that your forgiveness will make it all better. You forgive because you don't want to be led to anger, because the people making the ruckus have worth and dignity. You forgive it so that you can continue living your peace, your beautiful life. But you don't have to stay where you are. You can move, or you can ask the others to keep it down, or you can choose to work on whatever you're working on another time. And join in on whatever the ruckus is. There are always options. And to think we can actively tell ourselves to just forget a wrong done against us is plain foolish. Forgiving is not forgetting. You can remember an action that you've forgiven. You should remember it. Because even those hurtful moments, especially hurtful moments, can be teachers of great lessons. Maybe you forgive the infidelity of your spouse, but you do not have to remain in that relationship. Forgiveness doesn't mean weakness. It shouldn't lead us to more frustration. Forgiveness allows for the beauty of life to continue on. As I bring this sermon to a close, I'd like to share a little something that I've learned about music and forgiveness. Musicians must forgive their mistakes quickly. During a performance, if a musician misses a note or a cutoff, if they made some horrible sound, the song doesn't stop. The piano keeps playing, the tempo moves forward. If the mistake throws them and their head is in the measure where they messed up, if they hold on to it, they will continue to perform poorly as the song continues on and everyone ends up feeling bad, frustrated, and underwhelmed. If the musician chooses to forgive that mistake and forgive it instantly, whatever it was, the song can continue beautifully. The musician can go forward with confidence if they employ forgiveness. And a confident performance has better tone, better timing, better balance, and better harmony. Let us be musicians moving through the flow of life, knowing that little mistakes can break a performance, knowing that they don't have to, and that we can employ the intentional power of forgiveness to make this song we live beautiful, meaningful, and good. Thank you.